it's going to be Labor Day weekend next weekend, Binda. We are looking forward to that. And
this is Frank Sesich of Blue Ash, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC Accra.
Find out where the music takes Charlie Watts on the next Deep Threes, when the Rolling Stones drummer sits in with a Danish radio big band. Plus tracks from Galactic, Psychic Diet, Masasaki Uchida, and Andre Segovia. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518- 622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Lennox Local in Lennox, Massachusetts. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Mid-Hudson News reports that Kingston police have added patrols and stops as they combat a rise in violent crimes and gunfire. Mayor Steve Noble released detailed statistics of their increased activity, and state police have assigned a community outreach coordinator to provide more information about law enforcement efforts in Kingston, as some citizens have complained about the increased street presence. Quote, "We are trying to balance the proactive patrols with those concerns," unquote, said Mayor Noble. Quote, "Some community members have expressed anxiety about being stopped by police. Others are aware of the anxiety that a person may experience when they see the patrol car lights or hear the siren behind them. If you do get pulled over, we encourage you to follow these suggestions from the ACLU's website," unquote. Read more about the story at Mid-Hudson News website. Natasha Vaughn is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the Columbia County officials have reopened its expanded and renovated firefighter training facility in Ghent. The facility will help train the county's 900 volunteer firefighters in a variety of skills on a number of different training apparatus. The new facility replaced the former training space in Philmont near the Pine Haven Nursing and Rehabilitation Center. Quote, "It serves multiple purposes," unquote, Columbia County Fire Coordinator George Keeler said. Quote, "It's a training facility for multiple emergency response agencies in the county. It also stores the equipment for our hazardous materials calls, and the classrooms are also available for any of our county government agencies to use," unquote. Classes at the facility restarted August 4th, and the number offered will increase from 2 to 4 a week in September. Quote, "It's awesome," unquote, Columbia County Deputy Fire Coordinator Peter Harvey said, referencing the new 10,000-square-foot facility. Quote, "I've been waiting 31 years for this," unquote. There's also a 2-story fire training tower that replaces the 27-year-old training tower in Philmont, Keeler said. The facility also recently received donated hoses, ladders, axes, rubber mats, and portable training pond for the training facility. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Perry Teasdale is reporting in the Columbia paper that 2 journalists from the Columbia paper last week received awards in the New York Press Association's 2019 Better Newspaper Contest. The Thomas G. Butson Award for In-Depth Reporting Division I second place went to Associate Editor Diane Valden and to the Columbia paper for Valden's continuing coverage of Sal Casino's so-called Copaic Valley Farm and his ongoing practice of illegally dumping tons of construction debris and solid waste. Valden has been covering the Copaic Valley Farm story for more than 20 years. Photographer and reporter David Lee placed 3rd for Spot News Photo Division 1 for for a photo he took depicting Chatham volunteer firefighter Chris Nabel at the top of a ladder truck apparatus placing holiday lights on the village Christmas tree. A full moon shines overhead in the photo. The contest judges are journalists from other states. More than 170 newspapers in New York participated, and overall there were 2,918 entries. Division 1 includes papers up to twice the size of the Columbia paper. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper. And Melissa Hale Spencer is reporting for the Altamont Enterprise that nursing homes in the state of New York are pushing for less stringent visitation requirements. On August 28th, Stephen Hans, president and chief executive officer of the New York State Health Facilities Association and the New York State Center for Assisted Living, delivered a letter to Governor Andrew Cuomo asking the state to conform to federal guidelines issued on August 25th. The association represents more than 425 nursing homes and assisted living facilities. In mid-July, the state opened up nursing homes to visitors for the first time since mid-March, with strict guidelines that require a nursing home to be free of COVID-19 for 28 days. Only two visitors per resident may visit at one time, and visitors must have their temperature taken before entering and then use a face mask and physically distance themselves while in the facility. Each nursing home was required to develop a plan for visitors and provide it to the state health department. At the time this was announced, Albany County Executive Dan McCoy said, quote, "If one worker comes back positive, it sets the clock back and they can't open up for 28 days, unquote. McCoy reported this week that not one single nursing home in Albany County has been able to admit visitors. The letter to the governor calls cutting the waiting period in half to 14 days following a positive COVID-19 test for staff or residents before visitors can be admitted. It also requests that testing of employees be targeted rather than requiring all workers to be tested every week. New York was ahead of the federal government in setting requirements for nursing home visits and for testing of staff and residents. Nationwide, more than 40% of COVID-19 deaths have been of nursing home residents who make up approximately 1% of the U.S. population. Read more about this story in the Altamont Enterprise. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a mostly sunny Sunday with a high near 69 and a low around 49. Monday, there should be patchy fog in the morning. Otherwise, it'll be mostly sunny with a high near 72 and a low around 58. Tuesday, there is a 40% chance of showers with mostly cloudy skies, a high near 71 and a low around 60. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
Hi, everybody. This is Timmy Whippoorwill calling to you live from inside the oak tree. Please give what you can to wgxc.org/donate. Check it out. Their webpage is live. It's fresh. It's exciting and new. Even us here in the Whippoorwill community approve of such a place. WGXC is here for you, so why don't you be there for them?
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Christiana Abel of Housatonic, Massachusetts. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a graduate of Hudson High School, and I'm also from Hudson.
Hi, I'm AJ. I'm going into fourth grade, fifth grade. I forgot already. And I'm 9 years old.
I'm Fahim. I'm 15, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Lena, and I am also from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
Other bookish things.
Mm-hmm. I miss that so much.
Yeah, we're often here with our friends, Mashuda and Fatia. They couldn't make it today. We hope they are having a good week. But we're really glad that AJ is back.
Hooray! I've been reading too much. I'm like, radio? No. Radio? No. Every Monday because I'm reading too much. But we just got home, so now I have time.
Great. Glad you're back. So, AJ, do you want to get us started since we haven't heard from you in a while?
I think I might have already shared this. The World Treasury of Children's Literature. So there are many excerpts of books in here, and that's how I got turned on to a lot of my favorite books.
So it's a collection of story excerpts and poems?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Opposites by Richard Wilbur. What's the opposite of string? It's gnerts, which doesn't mean a thing. What is the opposite of two? A lonely me, a lonely you. The opposite of donut? Wait a minute while I meditate. This isn't easy. I found it, a cookie with a hole around it. The opposite of opposite? That's much too difficult. I quit. The opposite of opposite is not opposite. It is the same thing. It's just a word. The opposite of opposite is itisopo. I tried saying it backwards. I can't.
That's a tough one. And
another one?
Sure.
The Acrobats by Shel Silverstein. I'll swing by my ankles, she'll cling to your knees as you hang by your nose from a high trapeze. But just one thing, please, as we float through the breeze, don't sneeze. Ka-thunk. The Battle. Would you like to hear of the terrible night when I bravely fought the... No? All right. There are a lot of them. Mm-hmm. I have enough for two more, and then I'll give it to someone else. The Land of Happy. Have you been to the Land of Happy, where everyone's happy all day, but they joke and they sing of the happiest things and everyone's jolly and gay? There's no one unhappy and happy. There's laughter and smiles galore. I've been to the Land of Happy. What a bore. A poem on the neck of a running giraffe. Please do not make fun of me, and please don't laugh. It isn't easy to write a poem on the neck of a running giraffe. Because it's all broken up, because it's supposed to be a poem on the neck of a running giraffe, which is hard. I admit it, that would be hard.
Yeah, I don't suggest it. I think you should hold on.
Uh-huh.
If you're riding a giraffe in the first place, which I don't know why you need to ride a giraffe, but...
I thought you said...
Leave the giraffe alone.
I thought you said riding a giraffe.
Well, if you were riding on the neck of a giraffe, wouldn't you have to be riding it as well?
You hold on with your ankles and you ride upside down, and then you ride upside down because you're holding on to the head with your legs, and then you end up getting trapped all over your shirt.
So I looked it up, and according to the first article that popped up, there is a teenager who is aiming to revive the, and I quote, lost art of giraffe riding. So apparently it was once a thing.
Not me. Thank you. I'm not going to try that. I don't even know if we can now, so impossible?
But yeah, save the writing for later.
Yeah, just...
If you're riding.
Do the riding first, and then when it's resting. What about you?
Would I ride a giraffe? Yeah, I probably would if I had the opportunity.
I keep on forgetting everyone's names. I was going to call Amelia Lena for a second.
She's here, too.
Amelia. I didn't know that. I was just stumbling because I sort of got confused because I haven't been here in a while.
Well, thanks for sharing that, AJ. And
Amelia.
Yeah, how about
is it my turn? Well, my work finally ended a couple days ago, which means I'm now gonna have a lot more time to read, which makes me very happy. I'm still working my way through short scary stories, and I'm still kind of just dabbling in the areas of like stories on the internet written unprofessionally, because I think you find some really unique stuff in there. I just think overall the horror stories I find there are better, because when you write a story professionally, you have editors and publishers who might affect your work. When you publish a story online, you don't get any of that. So it's a really unique experience.
Story. Well, not true story, but you know what I mean. I hope they're not true stories. Although some of them might be.
Some of them. Like I said, it depends on what area of the internet you're looking for. If you want true stories, you can find them. But if you want fictional stuff, you can pretty easily find those as well.
In terms of stories that you've read, like in book form, mm-hmm. do you have a favorite scary story of all time?
Oh my gosh, my favorite scary story of all time would probably be one of the stories in Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, Harold, the one about the scarecrow. That one is my favorite.
That was creepy in the movie too.
It was. I think they did it justice in the movie, even if they changed a lot.
Tell it.
The story?
Yes!
I don't want to spoil it. I will say this, in the movie it's changed a lot because they fit a lot of the stories into the movie and it's not told as an anthology, which a lot of people didn't like, but I thought it was okay. In the story, Harold like hunts down a teen who has been like throwing rocks at him, pretty similar to the actual story where two farmers make a scarecrow to take their anger out on and name him after their neighbor, or their really rude neighbor named Harold. So they take their anger out on the scarecrow, and then one day the scarecrow starts moving, and so they decide to get rid of it because they've been beating it up all the time and they don't want it to get angry at them. And that's the story in the book. I'm not going to tell the ending because honestly it's probably one of the most gruesome of all the stories in that book, and that's why it's my favorite, but I also don't want to spoil it for anyone who just wants to read it. It's my favorite one.
Does it end with sharks?
Hmm?
Does it end with sharks?
No.
I like sharks the way you like dragons.
Dragons? I don't think they actually, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark doesn't really like tell any stories relating to like underwater horror, which is interesting. That's pretty popular.
I mean, they have a story about alligators.
There is a story about alligators. There is, but I don't remember.
Alligators.
I don't remember that water. One.
They can live water.
It's about a father and like two sons that turn into alligators.
Yeah, I thought that was it. Like, this woman finds out this woman thinks her son, her children have been eaten by alligators, but then one day she sees her husband and her two sons again, and they're like turning into alligators. I think that was like the story in that one. That one's pretty good too. I have to sit down someday and just reread all of them.
Me too. Well, Fahim, how about you? Do you have a book to talk about?
Yeah, I have two books to talk about.
Cool.
They're like mythological related books. The first one is called African Myths. It's like a series of like myths from like different countries or continents, like the African myths, Chinese myths, Egyptian myths, Greek myths, Mesoamerican myths, and Roman myths. And they're all related to like how they believe the world started and like how everything evolved, like how humans were created, who are the first people of Earth, and just like that's how like their belief, their tradition, their culture, and like their religion started. So like the first one, African myths. They believe in like the spoken tradition. It's like the way their like culture and like the way what they believed in, like the way it spread is through like telling stories and singing songs, and that like with like instruments and stuff, and that basically like, created imaginations and people to like know about African culture. It's like a lot of about like gods and tricksters and animals. Like, they believed animals. Like, I mean, animals, like, in a lot of cultures represent, like, sacred things. Like, there's, like, sacred land, sacred animals for, like, a lot of cultures. That's what African myths is also about. Some of the gods in, like, African mythology are Oleron. He's the wisest of the sky gods. Like, there's the sky gods. Then there's, like, one goddess of the sea called Olokon. There's Obatala. He's another sky god. And then there's Oromila, who's the eldest son of Oleron. Oleron is like, he's basically the wisest. He's like almost the king of the gods. But except they just respect him as being the most smartest. And then there's like other stories about Nayami, who's another sky god for like the Ashanti people. He's also considered as one of the leaders of the gods. And he like holds like all the stories of all these different African myths. And until like a spider called Anansi, who's like a, who's also smart, like all around. And then he later on like takes Naomi's stories. And then the spider now knows all the stories. He has all the knowledge. And then the stories keeps on like spreading and stuff. And then later on, like there's like a story about how a normal person, a normal man, how he met a dog, and how a dog became like a man's, like a human's best friend. How a dog can help a man, how a man can help a dog, how a dog can help like the village, the woman, like the children and everybody from like protection and everything. And a man can like give like food back to the dog, just like some stuff like that. The second book, The Chinese Myths, is like the Chinese point of view of how the world started. There were four dragons. They were like the yellow dragon, the pearl dragon, the long dragon, and the black dragon. And then like in like in the first story, they somehow did something like something bad that like the king of the gods of China didn't appreciate what they did. Like they accidentally helped the people, and the king of the gods didn't like, he was like, he said that he was going to help the people, but he forgot to. But then they showed like the people were like, they were barely harvesting any crops. They were like dying of starvation. The dragon started like helping them. But then later on, they were like buried with mountains and rock. And then their soul and their like blood created like these four rivers, the four great rivers of China, called the Yellow River, Pearl River, or the Yangtze River, the Long River, or the Heilongjiang River, and the Black River. And then, yeah, that's like the first story. And then it's like, there's many other stories of like Chinese gods fighting demons and stuff to help humans and stuff. And then like how like human movements spread the stories and stuff. That's basically what that the second book is about.
And this is a graphic novel series, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you find it interesting reading in that format?
Yeah, it was pretty interesting because I didn't really know how much about Chinese myths or African myths. So it was quite interesting. And also, like, all these myths, all these, like, books that are, like, in the series are, like, written by different authors and illustrated by other illustrators as well.
Yeah, those sound really interesting.
Yeah.
I like learning about myths and reading myths.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, no problem.
Lena, did you have a book you wanted to talk about?
Yes, the book that I'll be talking about is called Real Friends, and I'll read the back for you guys. When best friends are not forever, Shan and Adrian have been best friends ever since they were little, but one day Adrian starts hanging out with Jen, the most popular girl in class and the leader of a circle of friends called The Group. Everyone in it wants to be Jen's number one, and some girls would do anything to stay on top, even if it means bullying others. Now every day is like a roller coaster for Shannon. Will she and Adrian stay friends? And can she stand up for herself? And is she in the group or out? And that's it.
That's a graphic novel series too, right?
Well, it is technically a graphic novel series, I guess.
Well, there's always two books, I think.
Yeah, but like, I don't really know what makes it a series, like more than two books or like more than one book.
I guess because they're connected, I think of it as a series. But who knows, maybe you need more than two to be a series.
Yeah.
I hope there's a third. I like the first two books.
I never actually got to read the second book.
I get confused sometimes on which one was the second book. I thought Best Friends was the first and Real Friends was the second.
Oh.
Maybe. I might be wrong.
Yeah, maybe.
I was trying to picture the covers. But in your description that you were reading, it said a roller coaster ride. And I think that one has a roller coaster on the cover.
No, that one has a group of girls I'm standing in front.
So maybe that's the first one.
Yeah, it is the first
one. That's just funny that they have a roller coaster on the cover and a roller coaster in the description for a different book. Funny.
Yeah.
But you enjoyed it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot.
What did you like about it?
I liked how it basically represents changes in your life. Like, it starts out very good, but then it represents that there can be massive changes sometimes, and that you just have to deal with it.
I feel like it's one of those books that's pretty relatable for most people, because, I mean, who doesn't have changes in their friend life throughout life? You know, people move or start hanging out with different people or start acting differently.
For example, coronavirus, best example.
Yeah.
That's the biggest change I've had in my life so far, because I've moved, like, what, 6 times in my life?
Yeah.
My permanent home. Finally, I have a permanent home.
Yeah, I'm curious how many coronavirus books we'll get, like books there's set during the pandemic.
There's even a crude adult show about love during the time of coronavirus. So I'm like, what?
Oh, yeah.
Why would you want to do a show about that? Like, we have enough going on. Why do we want a show about that?
Yeah, there's a show
for future generations.
Yeah. There's a show that I found on Hulu that had to do with the coronavirus, and it's like people finding love during the coronavirus.
That's just crude.
I've been watching the TV series Watchmen, which is
watching Watchmen.
Yeah, exactly. But it's in it. It's like an alternate reality United States where all of the cops wear masks because they have to protect their identity, like hide their identity. And then there's also these sort of vigilante groups that also wear masks. And I think this series was on originally maybe a year ago and was not renewed for a second season. And I was thinking, like, this is the perfect show to make during the pandemic because half the cast is wearing masks anyways. But it was like the first show that I've watched where I'm like, oh, look, everyone's being so safe and wearing their mask. But anyways, that's not my book. I have a book to talk about. It's called Monster and Boy by Hannah Barnaby with illustrations by Anusha Syed. And it's an early chapter book. It has lots of cute pictures in it. And it's a story about the monster and the boy. The monster is the monster who lives under the boy's bed. And one day the monster decides so one day the monster is like, it's time for the boy and I to meet because his mom's saying there's no such thing as monsters. There's nothing under the bed. And he's like, yes, there is. I'm here. And so he wants to meet the boy and they meet and the monster sort of accidentally swallows the boy. And eventually the boy ends up outside of the monster but has shrunk. And so then it's a nighttime adventure of the boy and the monster trying to figure out how to get the boy back to his regular size.
Gross. Why would
it's not too gross. There are some parts that you could see as being gross, but I'd say it's mostly not gross. But it's fun and funny, and the pictures are really cute, and the writing's sort of clever and funny. I really liked it for people that are looking for sort of an easier chapter book. It's like a little bit more words than a Princess in Black type of chapter book, but less than a full-on. And it's the first in a series. I think that's why I picked it up. Oh no, I guess this is new too. But I think I saw that there was a second book coming out and was like, well, I guess I should read the first one and see if it's any good. And I thought it was very cute. So highly suggested for young readers. So when you all were little, did you have monsters living under your bed?
I have no under my bed.
Are you sure?
I'm sure because we have a giant wood piece like that holds up our bed.
Okay, so that would help.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to, like, when I was a child, I didn't have a bed with, like, an underneath. It was just flat on the ground. I didn't trust my closet, though. I still don't trust my closet. I still close it at night. I can't sleep with the closet open.
What did you think was in the closet?
I don't know. That's what scared me.
The unknown. How about Fahim and AJ? Did either of you have monsters under your bed or in your closet?
Yeah, I just slept.
Yeah, I think I was too scared to look.
I didn't care. I was like, ah, night, Mom. The school's right behind you. I don't like Mom looking at me while I sleep.
Ah, that's fair. So the monster in your room was your mom watching you sleep?
She's like, oh. I'm like, quit it.
I had two monsters in my room when I was a kid. And they were both based on me seeing scary movies when I was a little too young to see them. So one was, I had Jaws was living under my bed, the shark. So AJ likes sharks. So your friend, the shark, Jaws, was living under my bed. So I always, when I had to get out of bed, I would sort of jump or like try to get away from the edge so that it couldn't get me.
Put your pillows down in a trail.
I didn't have enough pillows. But then also if a stuffed animal fell like behind the bed, I was really nervous about grabbing them, but also had to rescue them so they didn't get eaten by a shark. And then there was a closet that was by my door of my bedroom, and I thought that gremlins lived in there because I watched Gremlins when I was a little too young. And so I would have to jump out of bed and then run past the closet to get out.
Gremlins
safely.
Is like, it's such an unnerving movie if you watch it, even when you're just the slightest bit too young. It's just unnerving.
Yeah, I should watch that again sometime. I think it's pretty dated looking now, the little characters, but it should be fun. But anyways, I don't have any monsters under my bed or in my closet anymore. Or if I do, they're friendly ones like the monster in the book that I read. I wouldn't mind him being under my bed, as long as he didn't eat me. Nobody wants that. I don't want
to see you shrink, because then you would have to stand up on your keyboard and have to push the mouse to touch anything.
Mm-hmm.
That would not work.
Yeah, he got really small. Very cute.
How small? Smaller than a dot?
No.
That would be a big thing.
I think he could like fit in my hand. I think the monster is similar to human size, so I think it could probably fit in my hand.
That's small.
Yeah, doesn't work too well. Yeah, so check it out sometime. So we're just about out of time for today. But we hope everyone has a great week with lots of quality reading time and stay safe from all the monsters. Have a good week and happy reading. Bye.
Quack.
Tanisha just came in. So, Tanisha, what I want you to do is I just want you to give us an overview of the event that you are a part of this weekend, because there's some things going on in Hudson that people should know about. I think it's Sunday, right? Tanisha? Yeah, she is.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
So the event on Sunday is for Black businesses, Black entrepreneurs. It's the first event for, you know, like for African-Americans that have their own businesses. It's a pop-up shop. And it's going to be Sunday, August 30th from 3 to 7. We'll be out there. Collins Kitchen will be out there. The Juice Branch. We'll have Midtown Jewelry, Moisturize Me. I'm sorry if I forgot any other people, but it's just going to be a couple of different vendors out there. There'll be free popcorn, free snow cones, free cotton candy for the kids. So, you know, you could bring the whole family out and come check out each vendor and, you know, try to support whoever, all of us or whoever you want.
Okay. Can you explain what a pop-up is? A pop shop?
It's just like a little, yeah, it's just like a spur of the moment event. Whatever you're selling, you go out in the, you could go out in the street and sell it. Like what we're doing, we're going to be out in the waterfront just selling not all of our stuff, but maybe just so you guys can know what we sell, if I explain it correctly.
No, that's, so when is that again?
It's Sunday, August 30th from 3 to 7.
Okay, and where at?
Down at the Hudson Waterfront.
Okay, and you said it was a Black entrepreneur pop-up, right?
Yeah, for Black businesses, upcoming business, if you already have your own business, small businesses.
Okay, so I don't want you to think that I'm acting crazy, but as a programmer, I can't tell people what to do, so I have to ask you to tell them. So that's why I'm asking the questions the way I'm asking. Does that make sense? Yeah, I don't want you to, like, I'm not only like, Vern, what you doing? Like, come on. No, it's just that I
You're fine.
Yeah, okay. So anything that you wanna shout out or anything before we let you go?
Shout out Tiffany Garriga, Columbia Opportunities. What is the thing with Miss Elena? Oh my gosh. Operation Unite. I'm sorry. Operation Unite.
I'm loving it.
They sponsored the event. And I believe Galvin also helped sponsor the event.
Mm-hmm.
So this is actually Tiffany's event. This is her first event that she's doing on her own. So, and she reached out to a lot of us. So, you know, big shout out to her for, you know, introducing this to us and for the community.
Okay. Tanisha, I will personally see you on Sunday. I'm going to come down rep. I'm sure some of the other people will. Thank you for everything that you do. Shout out to Collins Kitchen. Shout out to everybody involved. And you know the drive time way. Whenever you guys have anything coming on or going on, stop by, let us know so we can let the people that's listening know.
Yeah, thank you. Hope to see everyone there.
All right, take care.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're talking with Barbara Heisen, who has been active in the Albany Clean Air Coalition. County legislature recently passed a bill, 327, to clean up the air a bit in Albany County, particularly to stop or prevent the future burn-in of tires at the cement plant down in Ravina, Lafarge, and also to ensure that in the future we don't see more AFFF, toxic firefighter foam, being burnt at the Norlite incinerator, and does other things like stops any future garbage incinerators. So Barbara, why is this law important?
Well, for me, it's important because there's an increasing push of different companies sending construction and demolition debris, municipal waste, old tires. They're pushing all this material into the Upper Hudson Valley. where they hope that somehow people around here will find a way to get rid of it and put it out of sight. And one of the most popular proposals, at least amongst those who are handling this waste, is to burn it. We first learned about this in Queemans when in 2017 we learned that a third of Connecticut's municipal waste was going to be sent to the cement plant here at Ravenna, and it was going to be burnt there and used as fuel for making cement. Many people came out in a big press conference just 2 days after Christmas in 2017 and said, no, this is not appropriate, we don't want it. And that led to the Queemans Clean Air Law, which was passed in March 2019.
And what a lot of people may not know, I only knew this recently, is that since the kilns at both the cement plant like Ravenna or the aggregate kiln, which is actually the basis of the Norlite incinerator, since that they burn at very high temperatures, they're really considered in the industry really good for burning stuff because they burn it at much higher temperatures. And that's why you see his company, like a Farge, actually trying to get in things like tires and other materials, because that way it doubles their revenue stream. So they get paid for the product they produce, but they also get paid to burn this fuel as a waste disposal. Is that true?
Yeah, and I think that seems to be the case. And then there's a third factor, which is that they pay less. You know, they don't have to pay for coal or natural gas to run their cement plant because they're being paid to take waste products, whether it's tires or municipal waste, and they can use that as fuel, which means their cost of fuel goes down. So it lowers their cost generally. And what I was hearing at the public comment period for Daniel McCoy, who was trying to decide whether he will sign or veto the Clean Air Law, that public comment, public hearing, the people who were opposing the law and speaking on behalf of Lafarge said they were worried about not being able to compete with imported cement. So for them, lowering costs is very important because they believe it will help them compete with imported products. So I can see the business case for doing it, but it doesn't really add up when you look at what the environmental consequences are, because it seems that burning these waste products gives us very high levels of emissions that are toxic and unfriendly to both human health and the environment.
And of course, when you talk about being unfriendly to human health, you know, it causes, you know, so many air respiratory problems, I guess, and other type of illnesses, but that actually increases healthcare costs. I know, you know, air pollution overall in New York State is estimated to cost about, I think, in the neighborhood about $30 billion of additional healthcare costs on an annual basis. So one of the things these companies try to do is they try to pass on those additional costs to the taxpayers and the consumers in order to artificially lower the cost that they can sell their products at.
Yeah, and I think there's an interesting point. As you know, I lived in the UK for 30 years where we have a public health system. And that's in that country, as in many European countries, it's the state that pays for healthcare costs. So that means it's actually in the state's interest to have pretty tough environmental laws in order to reduce their own cost of healthcare. In this country, healthcare is largely privately funded, whether it's through the insurance companies or the insurance you pay for or that your company pays for. So the state is not expected for a lot of our healthcare costs to pick up that expense. And the companies are not expected to pick up that expense, although they would do through their insurance programs. But by and large, they get to push the cost of healthcare onto people outside their circle of responsibility. So that is part of the reason I think they want to oppose this law.
You know, and also one thing that usually strikes me is, you know, 30, 40 years ago when I was, you know, a young man, in high school and college, you know, it was probably true that America was among the leading countries in the world in terms of the strength of our environmental rules. That has not been true for decades, but yet many Americans, you know, think that, in fact, the United States has cut an edge when it comes to environmental laws. But one of the things, you know, it was interesting that Lafarge has been very public in trying to stop the law, whereas Norlite hasn't said much. But one of the things we heard, you know, from the Lafarge, you know, staff and employees was, well, this law is going to be too hard to enforce, so we shouldn't pass it because it'll be too hard for the government to make us comply with it. Does that make sense to you?
No, it doesn't make any sense at all to me on a number of grounds. First of all, when I was growing up, I thought that if, you know, the assumption was is if there was a law, people were expected to obey it. The assumption in this, from what they're saying, is being turned on its head. The assumption is that if there's a law, we will try to avoid obeying it, and it's up to you to make sure we do. A responsible citizen accepts the laws that are passed and obeys them. And the companies are, in effect, saying, we don't have to obey the laws unless you enforce them. Now, I accept that enforcement is part of the package. But first of all, there should be just the ordinary decency and sense of responsibility that if there's a law, you obey it. Second, enforcing this law is not hard. The county could, at the very simplest, require anybody who's in a position to want to burn this waste to publish what fuel they're using, of what kind, in what quantities, and they publish it in the Times Union or on a website of record every month. And those of us who take an interest in this can keep track of what they say they're burning, and we can say, hang on, why are you burning that garbage that's coming over from Connecticut? Why are you burning those tires when it's against the law? Now, they could lie, but somehow, you know, maybe it's a little bit harder to lie so blatantly. But even if that doesn't work, we have agencies like the EPA, like the DEC, who are running regular inspections of these facilities. If they know there's a county law that says these companies cannot burn these materials, then they can check on that when they're doing their routine inspections of these different facilities. The county doesn't have to do anything, but we can use the other agencies who do go in on a regular basis as the eyes and ears of the county to help them enforce the law.
Now, one of the interesting things is that many of these companies like Ravina, Lafarge Cement, and Norlite actually routinely get tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands dollars of fine. And while citizens may say, oh, they're taking strong action, in reality, it often represents a couple hours of operating costs. But we're down to our last 30 seconds. We've been talking with Barbara Heisen about the Albany County Clean Air Law. What should people do at this point? And if they need more background information, how can they best get it?
They should write to Dan McCoy and say, please sign the Clean Air Law now. My worry is if they let him delay the signing, it will take another month or two to get the, and then he decides to veto it. It will take another month or two for the legislature to override that veto. And I'm afraid that Lafarge will start burning tires in the meantime, and that will exempt them from the law. I don't want to see that happen. So write to Dan McCoy and go to look for the Albany County video online. That on the clean air law, that will help a lot.
And that's Dan McCoy, Albany County Executive, and this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Not come so much to a fork in the road as a fork on the plate, scraping the last lick off the gravy train of history.
There was nervous laughter from the dais that rolled outwards through the crowd, not a breeze that rustled flags and banners. It was the voice of Orson Welles, his baritone coming to us over decades of dead silence. Through a metallic tannoy, each word meticulously tape-spliced from various soundtracks and radio broadcasts in the Library of Commerce. It wowed the crowd, before it fluttered and faltered as the powder of lost oxide caused a catch in his voice, just as the spool ran out. Curiously, the simulated address seemed to be delivered in the same strange stage Irish accent that Wells had possibly purloined from the actor Micheál McLearmore when he had bluffed his way onto the Dublin stage as a teenager. Now it was just one in a queue of immigrant inflections that might have taken the day. It was also the voice that Orson had used in Lady from Shanghai. You know, the one with the shootout amidst the shattered reflections of funhouse mirrors. Few remembered that motion picture now. One man in the third row remarked to his wife that he seemed to remember this voice selling him sweet sherry in his youth. But there were many in the crowd who knew nothing of this citizen and the cane he had once raised, back when the worst one could imagine was an invasion from another sphere. After the peace was negotiated and the internet switched off, knowledge returned to its medieval cloister in this and that illuminated volume. The jealous possession of the pious and the superstitious, who might once again wield ignorance like a scythe. There were but dimly remembered facsimiles after many of the public libraries had been torched. Untouched books now went for the price of a Vuitton handbag. Ever since the U.S. Mint was sucked dry and spat out, bookworms paid for rare tomes with wheelbarrows full of banknotes. Some of them worthless Confederate money, stashed down a Mississippi square in plinths with the various toppled statues of Victus. None of it helped the healing. Yet in the absence of a noble woman or a statesman equal to the task, a tireless engineer had magically assembled the random words of Wells' oration into a speech worthy of the occasion from the depths of the National Archive. President Swift gave a slight shy smile of pearl and pillarbox red and began to sing a plain song of her acceptance.
Hudson-based singer Stephen Merritt fronts the Magnetic Fields, and he has a new cover out in 2020. The song is by Yoko Ono, and it's called Listen, the Snow is Falling.
Falling all the time. between Tokyo and Paris, between London and Dallas, between your love and mine. The sun, the snow is falling everywhere. Snow.